Okay, so what paradise, or actually what pure land of goodness and joy, is even the, in what pure land of goodness and joy, is even the name misery unknown, the state of supreme peaceful liberation beyond the compulsions of karma and afflictions. Okay, so here he... You know, when Glenn translated it, he used the word paradise. I don't particularly like that word because it's too Christian in context, you know. In Buddhism, we talk about pure lands or Buddha fields, something like that. But even that is not what is actually meant here, okay? Essentially, it's just as you guessed, I mean, the best, most peaceful state of existence is the state of supreme liberation, or we can say the state of supreme full awakening, yeah? Because at that point, at liberation, all the ignorance, the afflictions, the polluted karma have been removed, and so it's peaceful. It's not the same as full awakening. A full awakening, all the... You know, the afflictive obscurations, the ignorance, karma, polluted karma, and afflictions have been eliminated, plus the cognitive obscurations, the latencies of the afflictions, and the subtle dualistic appearance that they bring on. Okay? So that's the meaning of the verse, yeah. To talk about pure lands in general, a pure land is a place, and here that's not what is meant, you know, by when it talks about pure lands. But in general, a pure land is a place that a bodhisattva establishes as part of their bodhisattva practice on the path to full awakening. So they establish it by the power of... sometimes the word is translated vow or determination or resolve or determined aspiration. Some of the Tibetans often translate it as prayer, but prayer is not a good translation. It doesn't get the meaning of it. But it's, you know, when you're practicing the bodhisattva vehicle, you make some very strong determinations or aspirations that you're going to do certain things to benefit sentient beings. And so, you know, a pure land is a place where you carry out those determinations or aspirations. And every bodhisattva establishes a pure land. So every Buddha, you know, later has a pure land. And the pure lands of the Buddhas are where the Sambhogakaya, the enjoyment body of the Buddha, resides and teaches the Arya Bodhisattvas. Then some other pure lands are, you can say, open to ordinary living beings. You know, the ones that are established by the Buddhas for the resource body, those are like gated communities, except it's not like somebody else has been constructed the gate that kept us out. Our own mind has constructed the gate so we can't get in. Okay, you know, and the gate is our own afflictions and defilements. Okay, but then some pure lands like Sukhavati, which is actually the way it should be pronounced, Sukhavati, is a pure land that because of Amitabha's vows or determinations or aspirations is open to ordinary living beings. But to be reborn there, it isn't a question of just praying, you know, may I be born in Sukhavati, but, you know, you have to practice ethical conduct, practice bodhicitta, make dedication prayers, accumulate a great deal of merit, have some understanding of emptiness. In other words, it's not just by having that aspiration and chanting Amitabha's name. That came to be known in general as the way to get to Sukhavati, just chant the name and generate the prayers, because I think that was a way that was taught, you know, in China when you had a population that was illiterate in ancient times. Yeah, but the people who studied the practice, they all knew that there were more things that you had to do. Okay, so it's basically a thing of creating the cause to be born in a pure land. And so we do that by practicing the Dharma in general. There's other pure lands, you know, Tushita is one pure land. That's the pure land of Maitreya Buddha. And that is said to be outside the God realm called Tushita. Yeah, so they don't confuse it with the God realm called Tushita. They're different places. Okay? But then, you know, they talk about Akshobhya's pure land, and, you know, Tara's pure land is, you know, the Potala. Actually, Chenrezig's pure land is actually called the Potala, too. Actually, maybe Tara's is not called the Potala. It may have a different name. I can't remember right now. Yeah. But anyway, so there's a number of different pure lands. But here, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, the supreme best place, here place being a mental place to abide, is in liberation or full awakening. Yeah, so if a bodhisattva has established a pure land, can sentient beings, because of their karma with that bodhisattva, receive teachings there? When those sentient beings become Arya bodhisattvas, they can, unless that bodhisattva has, by the power of their determinations and aspirations, created a pure land that is open to ordinary living beings. Yeah. But then even you have like an Amitabha's, it's open to ordinary living beings. There's also hearers and solitary realizers there. But when you get reborn in Amitabha's pure land, you're reborn inside of a lotus. And if your mind, you know, according to the degree of your virtue, your lotus is going to open sooner. Okay? So if you don't have a lot of virtue, you're going to be inside that lotus for a long time. Okay? Yeah. Okay, this is the story of a Sangha and Maitreya, when a Sangha had the vision of Maitreya. I don't think that, at that point, they don't talk about a Sangha going at that instant, you know, when he saw Maitreya. They don't describe that as him going to Tushita. What they say is that his mind was pure enough so that he could see Maitreya, have the vision of Maitreya. It was after that they say he went to Tushita and then brought down the five treatises of Maitreya. He studied them there and then brought them down to our planet and then wrote commentaries on them. Right, right. Yeah, no, it's quite definite. You have to purify your mind, ethical conduct. Yeah. Bodhicitta, yeah, cultivate bodhicitta, and you know, and then when you chant the name, it's not just Amitabha. It's actually a practice for cultivating concentration. Okay, and if you read some of the Chinese masters who've written commentaries on the practice, you know, they're very clear that you, by repeating the name, you focus your mind one-pointedly on the name of Amitabha. And that's why you chant it really, really fast. Because when you do that, and you do that for a long time, not like 30 seconds like we do, but you do it for a long time, then there's no space for anything else in your mind but chanting Amitabha. So it really can help develop concentration. They also say that in the practice you meditate on emptiness. So, for example, you would say, Who is chanting Amitabha's name? Who is Amitabha? What's the difference between me and Amitabha? Yeah. Who am I meditating on? Okay. And so in that way it gets you to really think about emptiness and go deeper. And so, you know, it's with those kind of meditations that you can more rest assured of going to Amitabha's Pure Land in the future. Yeah. With the other ones, you're creating a lot of merit, you know, and especially if you make those prayers, you're forming a bond. But, you know, at the time we die, are we going to think of Amitabha? Okay, so if during your life you haven't thought much about Amitabha, you haven't thought much about the Dharma, you've done a little bit of chanting, but most of the time you're thinking about, you know, winning the lottery and having fun, then what's, you know, yes, the thought of Amitabha could come up at the time of death, but, you know, we're very much creatures of habit. So we should see what we think about most of the time, because that's, you know, kind of the direction our minds go in at the time of death too, which is why it's really important to focus the mind. So you do meet some people who are completely focused. You know, they may not know about concentration and the different stages of generating serenity or how to meditate on emptiness, but, you know, they're reciting Amitabha all the time and have some strong faith and strong link.